Bill Fennelly's here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on our YouTube channel as well as all of our social media feeds. I'm your host, Drew Mendel. We're joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manute through the magic of technology. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Still to join us this morning on the program, we're going to be joined by Craig Button of TSN, and then at the top of the next hour, by Patrick Johnston. He covers the Vancouver Canucks for the Vancouver Province and the Vancouver Sun. The Jets, of course, into Vancouver for a two-game series after tonight's contest in Edmonton. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if there's you see a little bit of line juggling ahead of tonight's game for the Winnipeg Jets.
Hold on a second. We've been doing the show for, 12 years? I was going to be shocked if you didn't say I wouldn't be shocked, because I'm pretty sure you say that every game, Drew, but pardon me, every show, but go ahead.
Thank you for pointing out my verbal tics. I'm sure that everybody appreciates that.
People will be looking for it now.
Yeah, well,
I have physical tics, Drew, so I mean, verbal tics are probably better.
That's a separate issue altogether there. You might want to get that checked on. Somebody can probably look into that for you. But, you know, just something to get that Kopp, Andrew Kopp is a player I think the Jets need to get a little bit more out of, and that they haven't seen sort of that same level of engagement that they saw maybe earlier in the year when he was playing higher up in the Jets lineup. So I wonder if Paul Maurice doesn't try and maybe shuffle things around a little bit to maybe see if you can generate a little bit more from Andrew Kopp and, you know, to a lesser extent, Adam Lowry. I think Mason Appleton's been going well still, but I wouldn't be shocked. You know, I looked back the last couple games, you know, the possession numbers for the Kopp, Lowry, Appleton line, where you typically would expect them to be higher up on the among the Jets forward group, hasn't been there the last few games. So I wonder if that's an area that Paul Maurice looks to maybe rejuvenate a little ahead of tonight's game in Edmonton and then entering into next week in Vancouver.
Yeah, you know, I don't disagree with you. I'm just not sure, like, you know, what the move would be, right? Like, I don't think you're going to break up Dubois, Connor, and Ehlers because they've been playing so well. And we know that Paul Maurice always keeps Scheifele and Wheeler together. So does that mean that a player like Paul Stastny moves down? Because we've seen that a little bit, right, guys? You go back, what was it? I don't know, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. What was the line? It was it Stastny, Appleton, and Lowry? If I'm not mistaken, they played a little bit together. But I'm just not sure, Drew. Like, I agree with what you're saying because, you know, Andrew Kopp, I think he had 9 points in his first, what was it, 6 games or 7 games. He had that 4-point game. And you know, the offense has dried up a little bit, unfortunately. Obviously, it doesn't, you know, mean anything. I mean, I think Andrew Kopp is a capable offensive player as well as being a reliable defensive player. But I just don't know, you know, what the move would be. I realize there's some people that are calling for, you know, a Blake Wheeler, Andrew Kopp switch, right? Which would mean Wheeler goes down and he plays with Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton. I just don't know. I simply don't know if Paul Maurice would even consider that. So So it's either Andrew Kopp switching for Paul Stastny on the left wing or Blake Wheeler on the right wing, essentially, unless you guys, you know, think that there's a chance, you know, Kopp plays on the Dubois line. I don't see it, Dave. Like, Dubois, Connor, and Ehlers over the last 4 or 5 games, I think are playing their best hockey of the season and have become the Jets' best offensive line in terms of, you know, shot attempts and possession. But, you know, we know that Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton have been really good. The offense just hasn't been there, even though, you know, Adam Lowry scored his first goal recently in 19 games. But there's no doubt, Drew, that you'd like to see more production. Like, right? Like, it's a cliche, but you'd like to see more goals. You'd like to see, you know, Andrew Kopp getting his name on the score sheet a little bit more, aside from, you know, getting penalty kill time. So we'll see what happens. But I wouldn't, you know, I'm not that worried about that line because that line has been really good, even though Mason Appleton, you know, same thing. Like, maybe, you know, he had the nice goal against Toronto. I don't think he has a goal in his last 3 games, but, you know, you look at that line and I'm not too worried about it because it's been fairly consistent as far as the Jets' forward lines go.
One goal from Andrew Kopp, Dave, in the last 10 games. That's in the month of March. So, I mean, you know, not that you expect Andrew Kopp to necessarily be, you know, pumping in goal after goal after goal. But I do think that there is some untapped offensive upside that I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, maybe Paul Maurice juggle things around, to my point, just to try and maybe get that going a little bit more. Because we know that, you know, any offense you're getting from Perreault, Thompson, and Lewis is unexpected. I mean, even though, you know, Perreault obviously got the nice goal on Thursday night in Edmonton, that line is just not going to be an offensive production line for the team. I mean, and we can talk about their usage, of course, and whether or not that should even be a line that is a regular line if we shouldn't see, you know, the Jansen-Harkins opportunity there. But, you know, I just want to see a little bit more balance. That's why I was asking Sarah when she joined us about an hour ago, is that maybe do we get to see Paul Stastny move off the wing and go back up the middle to try and generate a little bit more offense a little lower down in the Jets lineup?
Yeah, and I think that you're right, Drew, and I think that's what I spoke about that before Sarah came on, was that idea of, you know, switching things up. And you're not switching things up simply for the sake of switching things up. And people will point out that the Jets record would be indicative of the fact that they've won a lot of games right now with the current lineup. I would point to the fact that they've won a lot of games because their goaltending has been very good on many a night. And that has helped them, you know, secure some victories, even when they were getting caved in by the opposition. But I mean, at the end of the day, you can't just have one line going in the NHL. You need, because otherwise every team can shut that one line down, right? So I think that's one of the things you have to focus on, is not just having the Dubois line going. You want to have everybody contributing. And look, if you can get a goal here from Matthew Perreault and that fourth line, that's a great thing. That's not a bad thing. Nobody's going to complain about that if your fourth line is giving you some contribution. That's a good thing. But you need all three of your top nine to be really generating offense. And that's one of the things that, you know, we haven't seen as much of late. So that's one of the things that you would think, okay, well, here's an opportunity. Now, Paul Maurice may not be so inclined because, again, that first game against the Oilers a couple of days ago wasn't really necessarily indicative of what we've come to expect from either team, really. So is it a true representation? My guess is he may not make any changes today, to your point, Drew, because they haven't had that practice time, because he hasn't had an opportunity to give those guys the ability, even if they've played together. You want to have that muscle memory of that last game. So to my thought would be he's probably not going to make any changes for tonight. We may see those changes come about when they play the Canucks.
This is the big thing, and Drew makes a good point here, because, again, I think you guys are in agreement with me. The Dubois line is not being broken up. So you're talking about Paul Stastny moving off that line and becoming the third line center, which pushes Adam Lowry down to the fourth line. And again, I agree with Dave. I don't think this is going to happen tonight versus Edmonton, but that's a possibility. Or you're moving Blake Wheeler down the lineup. And I realize that, you know, in this city, you know, that's almost unthinkable that Blake Wheeler would be moved off of the Scheifele line. But
I don't think it's unthinkable in the city, as he's sorry. I think it's unthinkable to Jets head coach Paul Maurice.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I think for some Jets fans, it's unthinkable. But that's what you're talking about. And I would lean towards not what I would do, but what I think could happen is what you said, Drew. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we talked about when the Jets acquired Pierre-Luc Dubois from Columbus, that you could go up the middle with Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny, and Lowry. And then you'd obviously have to figure out, you know, what the construction of that fourth line would be. That would mean obviously Nate Thompson comes out of the lineup. So are you going to go with, you know, Lowry, Perreault, and Lewis? That's most likely what you're going to go with. And then obviously there's always, you know, the Jansen-Harkins factor, and he could be, you know, on the fourth line for Trevor Lewis, even though Paul Maurice said he likes Lewis in there because he kills penalties, and Harkins isn't going to be a guy, which I don't necessarily know why Harkins can't kill penalties, because as Dave knows, he's capable of killing penalties. So we'll see what happens, but that would be my guess. If Kopp moves up in the lineup, Drew,
yeah,
I would expect it to be for Paul Stastny, which would move him back to center. That would just be my you know, best bet.
I think if you start to shuffle things around, if you move Stastny off the wing, and all of a sudden your centermen are what we've talked about when the trade first happened. If your centermen are Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny, Lowry, I don't think the only time you're at in the defensive zone that you're at a disadvantage among centermen is with Scheifele. defensively. I mean, if Connor McDavid jumps out on the ice and you can counter with one of Dubois, Stastny, or Lowry, I think that you're reasonably happy with that matchup. Obviously, McDavid is an otherworldly hockey player, and you might not be able to stop him. But even against Austin Matthews in Toronto, if all of a sudden that one of your centermen is one of those guys, as opposed to Nate Thompson, no disrespect intended to Nate Thompson there, I think you like that matchup a lot more if you're Jets head coach Paul Maurice.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, it kind of feels like we're beating the dead horse here, because we've talked about the reason why you acquired Pierre-Luc Dubois was to give you center depth that would be able to match up with anybody else in the North. And so if again, that would necessitate Paul Stastny moving to your third line center and Adam Lowry being your fourth line center. And again, is that a sign of disrespect to Adam Lowry? Not really, because how hard is it to play your lines in a more balanced fashion? And that, to me, is what you need to do.
No argument there. We're hoping to get Craig Button on the program coming up here momentarily. I want to shift focus to what we left off with last week with Paul Maurice. Because we never, last week on the show, we did our evaluations of the Winnipeg Jets at the halfway mark. Who was exceeding our expectations, who was underperforming our expectations, and who was meeting our expectations. We left off with Jets head coach Paul Maurice. We never got to talk about him. And I think there's a worthwhile conversation to be had regarding the performance of Paul Maurice this season. And I know, everything that, I'm picturing in my mind right now is the Paul Maurice GIF that everyone loves to, the waving GIF, exactly, where everyone likes to tweet that anytime you talk about the coaching situation for the Winnipeg Jets. How would you guys evaluate Paul Maurice at this point of the season? The same question can go to those who are joining us in the chat room. What have you liked about the job Paul Maurice has done? What have you disliked about the job that Paul Maurice has done so far this season as Jets head coach? Ezzy, you're on mute, buddy.
When you look at the Jets record, sorry about that, there's a lot to like, but then, you look a little bit deeper into the analytics, like we've talked about the expected goals, the high danger chances against, things like that. And, there's some troubling concerns about this team defensively. And at the end of the day, the head coach is responsible for the way the team plays defensively and offensively. So in that regard, I think, you look at the systems, and there's a lot of times when, the Jets have problems defending in their own zone. But, overall, the Jets have done a really good job of bouncing back after a loss and not letting any losing streaks happen here, guys. Like, we're 30 games into the season, and the Jets have only lost two games in a row once, and that was earlier in the season, right? They haven't lost.
And one of them was in overtime.
Exactly. So they haven't lost two regulation games in a row. Sure. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive when you're 30 games into a season. Like, they're tied, they're in second place, a couple of points back of first place. So that alone, means that he's obviously doing something right. Does Connor Hellebuyck have a lot to do with that? Yes, of course he has a lot to do with that. But I think, the inability sometimes to make moves on the roster is something that, I'm not the only person that sees that. I mean, it's not just, when it comes to the forwards, it's not just when it comes to the defensemen. But I think, a player like Jansen Harkins is somebody that I would like to see in the lineup. Paul Maurice has given his reasons why, and obviously, he doesn't care what I have to say. But, I think when Matty Perreault is playing as well as he's playing, and, Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis are playing as well as they're playing, it's tough to get a guy like Jansen Harkins in. But, overall, the special teams have been fairly strong. The Jets are top 10 in the league in power play. The penalty kill hasn't been as good as it's been. But I think overall he's done a fairly good job. I think it would just overall be, the team defense and sometimes the Jets' inability to get through periods without giving up, six or seven high danger chances and a couple of goals. Right now, this Jets team is clicking offensively. There's no doubt about it. Maybe not so much on Thursday night, but defensively, that's the biggest area of weakness on the Jets. And it's not all on the coaching staff, but a lot of it is on the coaching staff.
Dave, Nate Thompson is such a sort of a perfect example to me about Paul Maurice and where he wears his blinders. And, why does Nate Thompson need to be in the lineup? So what we've heard from Paul Maurice is he likes him for the penalty killing, job that he does. He likes him for his responsibility in the defensive zone. So I went back. Nate Thompson, he was injured, of course, and missed a big chunk of time. He's been a regular now in the Jets lineup since February 19th. How many seconds a game do you think he plays on the penalty kill?
7 to 15.
24 seconds. So you're not too far off. So it's a minimal. He's the fifth penalty killer out on the ice for the Winnipeg Jets.
It's basically to take faceoffs late in a penalty kill is what that is.
So I checked out his faceoff numbers. His defensive zone faceoff winning percentage since rejoining the team on February 19th or becoming a regular in the lineup on February 19th is 51.4%, which is the best on the team. So he does get credit for that. He is the best at, defensive zone faceoff winning percentage over the past month or so. But is that one factor enough to keep a guy in the lineup? Because to me, when you got Stastny and Lowry, those guys should be able to at least get pretty close to a 51% number that, that shouldn't be the tipping point to keeping a guy in the lineup.
No, I mean, and again, I think I've been pretty on board with my suggestion that I think if you can provide yourself with that sort of center depth as we've outlined, why not avail yourself of it? You have many talented forwards who could jump up and play, in that Jansen Harkins. Jansen Harkins could be a winger who's shown chemistry with Blake Wheeler, So, I mean, you can put Jansen Harkins into a scoring role. I mean, the guy put up, look, the AHL is not the NHL, right? But he put up, 31 points in 31 games for the Manitoba Moose before he got called up by the Winnipeg Jets last year. So Jansen Harkins can play offense and he's a smart player. So Christian Vesalainen, there's another guy who is a strong offensive player. I mean, if you need offensive guys, you've got them in your bag of tricks. So you don't necessarily need to have, Adam Lowry. And again, it goes to that old way of thinking, right? Like, do you need a fourth line checking, role team? And Ezzie loves to quote the Islanders and what the Islanders are able to roll out. And so to me, it's like, you're not expecting, Adam Lowry's he's a UFA. He's in a contract year. He's had a better production year than he did last season. But at the same time, wouldn't it be great from a Jets perspective to have three lines that score consistently and a fourth line that you feel, because to your point, Drew, the Appleton, Lowry and Kopp line, we're getting caved the last few games. And it was interesting because it's not something we're used to seeing from them. They were spending a lot of time in the Jets zone. They were spending a lot of time not getting that puck out of the Jets end, which is not something we're used to seeing. So again, maybe if you put them into a role that is a little reduced slightly at 5-on-5, then you're able to give them the opportunities. You can use them in an effective manner. And again, that's just my own opinion, which I'm entitled to.
But you are entitled to your own opinion. Yes,
I know. So,
not your own facts, your own opinion.
No, I, the facts are all that I see, what I see in the game and what I'm following in the numbers. But again, I just think it's such a luxury to have center depth. So why not avail yourself of it? Most teams wish that they could have, Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny and Lowry. That's a top four. That's just as good as any in the NHL. So why not use it?
Well, yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I was going to say that, it's old school thinking to think that a fourth line can only be a checking line. The reason why I like that Islanders line, and I think, many teams and coaches around the NHL look at that line. First off, there aren't that many fourth lines that have been together that long. And so, Casey Zizekas a couple of years back had 20 goals. So it's not like a fourth line, is full of guys that only have a few goals, right, Dave?
Yeah.
So I think, that's what you want. And you mentioned this earlier, there have been nights as of late, and let's not forget the Jets have lost 3 of their last 5 games. So, I'm not saying the Jets have been playing poorly, because last Saturday night was arguably their most impressive game in that win over the Leafs. But, you haven't had as much production from those bottom lines as you probably like. I'm not talking about Matty Perreault, because Matty Perreault has been putting the puck in the net. It's as a whole. It's not just one player. You can't look at a line as just one guy. It's the type of production you're getting from the bottom two lines. And yeah, that's why, even though Jansen Harkins, didn't have any points in his 11 or 12 games, whatever it was, I mean, the point is you're trying to move pieces around whether that's bringing them into the lineup or, you know, moving maybe Matty Perreault up to the third line. I don't know. But you're just trying to get more consistency out of these lines so that you can play them 11, 12, 13 minutes a game. I'm talking more about the fourth line because we know that, you know, Kopp, Lowry, Appleton are going to play much more than, you know, 8 or 9 minutes. But that's, I think, what you're looking for here. And obviously the Jets have a lot of time here, boys, and they have the luxury of, you know, being a top three team in the division right now. But I think they're in a part of the schedule right now where you do have, you know, a lot of offense coming from the Dubois line. And yeah, Scheifele, Stastny, Wheeler, it's not like they've been bad by any stretch of the imagination, but there's definitely, I think the word I would use is the bottom six might be a little bit stale at this point.
I think that's a good way to put it. And when we come back, we're going to take a quick commercial break here for a minute or two. When we come back, I want to talk about the week upcoming for the Winnipeg Jets and really look at the North Division as a whole. Because I think this coming week with those two games against, you know, after tonight's game against Edmonton, and we're not overlooking that, but this, you know, the two games against Vancouver and then the three games against Calgary, I think the Jets have an opportunity to really affirm themselves, you know, and get as close to a guaranteed playoff spot as you can at this point in the season with good results. So I want to talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile!
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go,
"We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?"
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs from restorative to cosmetic dentistry and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see LindenMarketDental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Saturday morning, we're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. Going to be joined by Patrick Johnston of Post Media in Vancouver in about 15 minutes' time to talk about the Vancouver Canucks, team that is on fire. Victors last night against the Montreal Canadiens. And of course, the Habs take the game into overtime, which they seem to do every single night. They don't win in overtime ever, but they never lose in regulation either, which is why the Habs' record is really a bizarre looking one in the standings right now.
Where it really is, though. It's like bordering on absurd. I just got a text from Craig Button. I think he is ready to jump on with us. But yeah, it is bordering on absurd. What are they, 0-8 now in overtime, or 0-9?
Something like that.
It's tough to do that.
They are 0-9 in overtime. 13-8-9 on the season, which means they have 9 losses in either overtime or the shootout, and only 8 losses in regulation. So it is an utterly bizarre record for the Montreal Canadiens this year. But that's not what we're talking about. The Vancouver Canucks. So the Jets obviously have Edmonton tonight, and then they have Vancouver Monday and Wednesday. The Canucks right now 4 points behind the Jets. The Jets have those four games in hand, which is obviously a huge factor there. But if the Jets can go into Vancouver on Monday, Wednesday, and if they were able to take, you know, those 4 points or a good number of those 4 points, three out of the four, then that's basically almost putting that to bed right now, as far as I'm concerned, given the number of games the Jets still have in hand on the Canucks.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any question about it, and that's what we've talked about, why the Jets are still positioned well, even though things are tightening up in the North, because aside from Montreal, they have games in hand on everyone. So I think that's one of the – or Edmonton, sorry, but and Montreal. And I think that's one of the things that you're going to look at, and that's one of the things, again, you have to win those games, Drew, and you mentioned that in the first hour. So that'll be incumbent on the Winnipeg Jets to continue to win, but I think that they can do it.
Yeah, I mean, and tonight, and then you go next week, you got the three games against the Calgary Flames, and this Calgary Flames team is a different Calgary Flames team than we've seen so far this season because of the new addition. The Jets haven't seen a Daryl Sutter-led Calgary Flames team so far, and we know they had the embarrassing defeat to the Edmonton Oilers on Wednesday night, where they got absolutely kicked by the Oilers, but then they bounced back last night and they defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs. So this Calgary Flames team, which I think for a lot of the season was playing, without an identity, I would say, or not a really clearly defined identity, is beginning to get that under Daryl Sutter. Whether or not that's the best use of their players, time will tell. And I'm not convinced that they are going to all of a sudden become a playoff team, but I think they're going to be a much more disciplined and a much more organized, let's say, Calgary Flames team than what we saw previously under Jeff Ward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you're seeing more balanced scoring. You had four different goal scorers yesterday. Obviously, you know, the captain, Mark Giordano, getting the game winner. And, you know, you're right, Drew. I mean, they're definitely getting the Daryl Sutter bump right now. And I think at times there was a little bit of, passiveness, you know, to their game. And, you know, Jacob Markstrom, we know, is an excellent goaltender, and, you know, he wasn't the issue at all. I think, you know, what you were seeing was if, you know, players like Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, Elias Lindholm, and Matthew Tkachuk weren't scoring, that, you know, that was really leading to the Flames not having an offense to be in some of these games. But I don't think that at any point, during the season, did I think that, you know, the Flames were a bad team. I just didn't think that they were getting the results. And obviously all teams are going to count on their top players, no different than the Jets, you know, with Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, Nick Ehlers, and, you know, we know the list, throwing, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois in there as well. The question is, you know, can Calgary keep this going? Because, you know, they've had to win all of these games just to stay in the playoff race. They still haven't got over that playoff line. So we'll see what happens here. Obviously the three games against the Jets, are going to have a big say in that, because if the Jets are able to take two of these three games, you know, it's going to be really tough, you know, for Calgary to get into this. They're going to have to continue to win, you know, three out of every five games, four out of every five games. But there's no doubt that Daryl Sutter has brought in some accountability, and he's producing results early on, and it's nice to see, because, you know, we don't want any of these teams to be completely out of the playoff picture. It makes for better hockey shows, and it makes for better, you know, races when it looked like there were only four teams in the playoff race. So now you've got Vancouver and Calgary, as I mentioned, you know, last hour, that have clawed their way back into it here. And it's nice to see, because, you know, there were pretty high expectations for both of those teams, you know, not just Calgary, but, you know, Vancouver as well, you know, getting to the second round of the playoffs last year.
Well, you know, the Vancouver Canucks, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. Since the month of March began, so that's 10 games ago for the Canucks, 8-2. So, I mean, you can say what you want, that it might be a little bit too, you know, it might be too little too late, but an 8-2 record in a month, Dave, that's an .800 winning percentage, that's pretty good. And we have seen teams, you know, you think back to the St. Louis Blues, go on those, you know, crazy runs that are backstopped by goaltending. And goaltending, of course, is the great equalizer. I mean, now that they've established Thatcher Demko as their number one goaltender in Vancouver, this is what the Jets have to worry about. His record in the last 9 games, 8-1. He's got .950 save percentage and a 1.74 goals against average. I mean, those are incredible numbers for Thatcher Demko and the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and we thought Thatcher Demko was going to be the guy, especially after what we saw from him in the in the play-in series and in the playoffs, I should say. And so, I mean, I'm not really surprised. He was picked to be the next guy in Vancouver. And so we're seeing what he can do, you know, now that they have to give that him an opportunity to make a run. And again, you know, you're always going to have to do it, but that's what the Jets rely on too. They've got a pretty good goaltender in Connor Hellebuyck and Lauren Brossoit, goaltending tandem, I should say. So that's something both teams have to deal with.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun week. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. This is, I think, a very important week for the Winnipeg Jets. They're at now the other side of the halfway mark of the season. And what you're going to see here, you know, if you can take care of business in the next week where you have these, you know, starting tonight, you have tonight, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then, of course, next Saturday and next Monday, you know, if you can take care of business, you know, with these next four games that are upcoming, you do get that separation where I think you can begin to almost refocus. You're not looking in the rearview mirror nearly as much as you are chasing or, you know, atop the division and continuing to build momentum going forward to the playoff stretch drive, Dave. And that's, you know, it's, you know, we're not that far away from where that really has to be your focus. We're less than a month away from the trade deadline. And then from there, it just, you know, it's going to be, you know, a rapid fire situation until the playoffs actually begin.
Yeah. And I think that's why I talk about it. It doesn't really sometimes matter how you do it. It's about what you do and adding points to the standings bank, as I like to refer to it, is critical. And that's what the Jets have done. And that's what the Jets have consistently done. The Jets have consistently not lost two games in a row. And as a result, they've managed to bank points that have allowed them to stay in this tight North division and stay pretty close. I mean, remember, this is a team that most pundits didn't have even making the playoffs or fighting for that fourth and final playoff spot. And now they look like a team that's going to fight with Edmonton and Toronto for that first spot. So again, they've done what they needed to do, which is accumulate points to put themselves into a good position to fight for, you know, a really good position in the North Division.
Pleased to be joined now by our good friend on the program, TSN Director of Scouting, Craig Button, joining us on the program. Craig, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you, and nice to see you on this Saturday morning.
Yeah, sorry. I was waiting in backstage. I was a little slow getting up there with Chrome, and then I was backstage, and I was waiting and waiting and waiting. I didn't hear any music. It's okay to be backstage, but I didn't hear any music.
Sorry about that, Craig. I might have sent you the wrong link, so that's on me.
Don't even sweat it. I just all kidding aside, here we are.
Exactly. We made it. No worse for wear, Craig. Always, talking about the Winnipeg Jets as we do each and every Saturday, and we're just talking about the North Division. You know, from your perspective, you've watched the Jets. We've seen you on the broadcast, you know, with Sarah Orlesky doing, you know, the intermission analysis. When you're watching this Winnipeg Jets team, what are you seeing, you know, more often than not from your perspective?
Well, I see a team that's, you know, when they have the puck, they're pretty darn good and they're very dangerous. And, you know, that should be no surprise. I mean, when you have Scheifele and Wheeler and Dubois, and I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers has taken his game to another level, and it's really interesting to watch Nikolaj, because I don't think he would have been able to do it in the same manner with Patrick Laine still there. And, you know, I watch a team, and, you know, obviously Kyle Connor, Paul Stastny's really been impressive. I love their forwards. I really do. And I think they have a different group of forwards. They have skill, but they can attack you and put you into uncomfortable positions multiple ways, you know, and they can do it with the Lowry line. I mean, Nate Thompson scores a really big goal the other night. So I just like the way they're formed and the way their team looks. You know, Connor Hellebuyck, just put a check mark there. I mean, don't even worry when he starts. And Laurent Brossoit has been really good this year. You know, I'm going to say something that's as obvious as the nose on my face. If they can improve that defense, they will only improve their chances for advancing. I mean, that's as simple as that. And it doesn't have to be a number one defenseman. I mean, that would be lovely, right? But there's not. But somebody that can, you know, give you 20 minutes, somebody that can give you 19 minutes of really good play in some area of the game, and that takes some of the pressure off of Pionk and takes some of the pressure off of Morrissey. I think Derek Forbert has been a terrific addition. Pullman gives you everything he has. You know, but if they can find a way to add a player that can play within that group of the top pairs, the two top pairs, I think they'll be that much better. because that's the one area where, you know, they're fortunate to have Connor Hellebuyck, because he literally is a safety net a lot of nights for the for the Winnipeg Jets.
Craig, wanted to ask you about the Calgary Flames. Of course, you used to be the GM of the Calgary Flames, and you know, your brother is still a part of that organization, of course. And when you look at this Flames team, like, we knew that, you know, there was going to be changes under Daryl Sutter. Like, what have you seen as the biggest change? Obviously, the wins have been a change, but, like, aside from the fact that everybody looks at Daryl Sutter and knows how good of a coach he is and the type of coach he is, like, what has he just got more out of this team than Jeff Ward?
Well, I think, Ezra, like, absolutely the second part is true. And a coach's job is to maximize the potential of the team and have the players play to the best of their abilities. That's a coach's job. There's no, like, you know, like, oh, well, he's not playing. Well, you got to find ways to get the team to play better and to form. And you got to have players play to the best of their abilities. And Jeff didn't do a very good job. It's simple as that. And that's why he was replaced. Daryl, you know, it's a paradox. I've used this term before. It's a paradox to say when you're patient, you'll be quicker. You know, it doesn't seem to fall. But by that, what I mean is, he has the players play very patiently in their positioning. Get in the right position, defend it fiercely. Don't be chasing out of your position and being vulnerable, right? And then if you're in the right position, you are going to be able to be very quick to make a play defensively. You're going to be very quick to transition, and you're going to be very quick to go to be in offensive spots. You know, if you're always chasing and, you know, if you think about it, if you move 3 feet out of a position, it takes you 6 feet to make up for it if it goes the other way. Like, you know, and so that's a lot of space to make up in a very short period of time. And as fast as Connor McDavid is or as Nikolaj Ehlers is, not even those guys can make up that kind of space in that amount of time. So, you know, it sounds funny that it's math, right? It is math. But Daryl has given them a very clear focus. Here's what we got to do. Here's how we play together. Here's how our position is number one. Like, and that was significant. Like, they're defending the blue line better. They're not giving up the quality shots in front of the net because their position is tighter. As for the individual players, Daryl is very, very clear. He looks at a player and he says, okay, here's what I think you can do. Here's what I want to see you do. And he gives that clear direction. But also with it, he also says, listen, I'm not going to ask you to do more than you're capable of, but you better not give me less, because if you give me less, we're going to have big problems. And so it's clear. The players don't have to think about, well, do I do this? Do I do that? He lays it right out for them as clear can be. And as you point out, as that's why he's such a good coach, and that's why he's been such a good coach for such a long time.
Craig Button is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. You know Craig, of course, from his time you're working the intermissions for the Winnipeg Jets. He's also TSN's director of scouting.
Well, and Craig, speaking of scouting, you know, prospects can sometimes take a long time. And you know, we live in an instant gratification society. And I got to tell you, I watched every Logan Stanley game he played for the Manitoba Moose. And I, who thought he was an NHL-capable defenseman, didn't think he would get to this level yet. And yet he's done that because of his hard work during the offseason. But is his story a cautionary tale for all the people who are quick to label a draft pick a bust because they're not right in the NHL?
Yeah, Dave, I would say that, you know, the way you described that is very, very accurate. And the instant gratification, too, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, Logan, I mean, really what he is, he's an overnight success in 5 years. It's unbelievable how good he's been since he was drafted. I mean, Logan and you know, players have to develop in different ways. And Logan, obviously, his development steps were going to be different than somebody else's because of the style of player he was. I mean, I don't care if you're 6'6" like Logan Stanley or you're Ville Heinola, who's 5'11". You know, to play defense in the National Hockey League, you have to learn how to gain leverage. And so for the big Logan Stanley player, it's no different the leverage he has to learn. He just has to learn it in a different way. The weight over his body, the ability to carry that weight, you know, everything that goes with leverage and defending, beating pressure. And so, you know, as you talk about watching him, you see this potential. He's always been good with the puck. He's always had a real good sense of the game. But it was always going to be about the leverage and the skating and letting his body come into form. I mean, they call it coordination and strengthening, but that's what it was. And now you watch him be able to handle some of those things, you know, beat the pressure below the goal line, defend, you know, because if you can't get leverage, I don't care if you're 6 foot six, players are going to go right in and around you because they get under, they get in so tight and in on your body that it becomes really hard if you don't have that leverage. That's what he's developed. You know, Dave, it's funny for me when I hear something like, oh, wow, what a great player. Like, this guy's going to be great. It's one game. Or in the case of Alexis Lafreniere, oh, my God, what's wrong with him? Well, nothing's wrong with either one of them. They're like, but we are impatient. And, you know, one of the things, and I see this a lot now, you know, NHL teams are trying to temper expectations. But at the same time, it's hard to temper expectations for some teams because you're selling this. So when you start selling something and it's their own mistake, you know, all of a sudden now the expectations raise. And it's not the fans' fault. It's the team's fault. I'll tell you a quick story. I hope it can be quick. A lot of times I'm not as quick as my intentions, as I set out in my intentions. But I was sitting with Mike Modano at training camp 1 year. And I don't know if he was 21 or 22, somewhere in that age range. He's the first overall pick. We're just sitting around talking. And he says to me, he goes, Craig, he goes, you know, we draft these players and they're young kids. And, you know, and he goes, and you say, you know, he's going to be a 30 goal scorer. He goes, we get excited as players. We get really excited. We go, wow, 30 goal scorer. Wow, this is great. We're getting a 30 goal scorer. And he said, he goes, so if that player turns out to be a 30 goal scorer, he goes, well, that's just what he was supposed to be. You know, great. But if he doesn't, he said, like, somehow there's a disappointment. There's a disappointment of the fans. We kind of think, oh, geez, we thought we were getting a 30 goal score. You know, maybe frame it differently. Maybe just try to say, hey, listen, we're going to get a really good a really good player. You know, we think that he's got a chance to, you know, contribute offensively. He said, don't put numbers and all these expectations on him. You know, be positive about him. And I kind of looked and I said, this is the first overall pick. So he was speaking from some of his own experiences, but I can tell you what, from that point on and with Minnesota and Dallas, we never, ever from that point on put like 30 goal score, you know, top two defense, number two defense, you know, like, you know, all those things. We just described the player, why we were excited about the player and that we were going to work with him. So but you know, your team's struggling and you have a high draft pick and, you know, oh, yeah, this is the future, and this is what's going to happen. And you know, like Cole Caulfield, who Montreal drafted, I mean, he's a terrific player. He's going to win the Hobey Baker. He's the best player in the college hockey. There's no question about it. And I was asked, I've been asked, do you think he's ready to play? I said, I don't know if he's ready to play. I don't know. But here's what I would say. He's an elite goal scorer, and the Montreal Canadiens don't have that. So you know what? Say we're going to give him a chance. Don't say he's going to come in and score and he's the answer to our problems. Say we see an elite goal scorer and we're going to give him a chance and an opportunity. And if he's not ready, that's okay. But he's dominated college hockey. He brings something you don't have. So frame it in a different way. We're giving this player that we have really high hopes for an opportunity. It doesn't mean he's failed. But when you start to say, yeah, we really think he's going to come in and help our power play. He's the trigger man we need to get on the right side. Well, now you've raised the expectations. What you've also done is put pressure on the player too. So and players feel the pressure. And the younger they are, when they don't have those accomplishments and those experiences, the harder it is for them.
Craig Button is TSN's director of scouting. You see him at intermissions during the Winnipeg Jets broadcasts on TSN. Craig, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Our apologies for the little bit of the hiccup before, but thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Always a pleasure to join you guys. You know, wishing you the best here. And when I can join you and you ask me to join you, I'll be happy to do so. So have a great Saturday, first day of spring.
There you
Absolutely.
Go.
Craig. Thanks, Craig.
We're going to hold you to that. Thanks so much. There he goes. Thanks. Craig Button. And we're pleased to seamlessly welcome back to the program our good friend from Post Media in Vancouver. I got to say, a devilishly handsome man, if there has ever been one, Patrick Johnston from the Vancouver Sun and the Vancouver Province. Patrick, good to
see you. Are you guys cousins?
I mean, it's a spitting image. We should, frankly, this is, I mean, we've never had a better looking left side of the screen than we currently do right now on the program.
Well, I mean, if this is the way it's going to work out with, you know, you guys getting unceremoniously booted off the airwaves, this is the way to do it.
That's
you
right.
Can see how handsome up and down are, and you know, I don't know what, or wait, yeah, over here, this side over there.
What's going on over there? Exactly.
Hi guys, how are we?
We're doing great, Patrick. Thanks for joining us, and I hope you enjoyed listening to Craig there. You know, give
love
him, you know, he's so eloquent and talks about talks so well about the game. It's nice to listen to.
The thing I'll say about Craig is I appreciate the self-awareness because he knows he's got these stories. And like Craig and I have never actually talked on the phone. We've texted because he's like, "Well, how about this time?" And I'm like, "Well, that time doesn't work." And he just knows he just doesn't have the window.
Yeah. Still,
he needs, you know, this much, and I can only give him this much. And he goes, "Nope." So, no, I appreciate it. I love Craig. Love Craig.
Exactly. Patrick, obviously brought you on to talk about the Vancouver Canucks, the impressive Vancouver Canucks as of late. You know, winners last night in Vancouver in overtime, a beautiful goal by JT Miller. You know, Thatcher Demko, who we'll talk about during this interview, is playing out of this world, reminiscent of what we saw in the bubble last summer. Is it too little too late, or do they still have a chance?
Well, I was going to say impressive in this case is spelled D-E-M-K-O. I mean, last night's game was a statement. It was a huge statement because most of this month, because it's been basically March 1 and you turn the page since they played the Jets. And it's been this run. They won what, 8 of 10 and 7 of those wins have had Demko in net. And, you know, really other than last night, 6 of them have been about the play of their goalie. I've got the math all right. It's 7 games. I can't even remember anymore. I've lost track. It's been so bizarre. That's how crazy it's been. Because Thatcher Demko's goal save percentage this month is .952. And that's the story here. Do they have a hope? Yes. You know, I think the real story continues to be, what is that playoff bar going to be? Because they've sort of pulled themselves back towards where they needed to be. For the longest time, we thought the bar was going to be like 62, 63 points. Now I see we're talking more like maybe 67, just because you're looking at how well the Oilers are playing, how well the Jets are playing, you know, what happens with the Flames, the Habs. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to hear Craig talk about they don't have that high-end score. Of course, the Tyler Toffoli story has been, you know, never ending here. but, I mean, the truth is that he's their best goal scorer. You know, I mean, he's a heck of a player. But he's not that like top end Elias Pettersson, Mark Scheifele, you know, Kyle Connor, like top end guy. So, you know, in many ways is sort of the statement that the Canadians have got a nice sort of second tier of depth everywhere. They don't have that top end guy. The Canucks, of course, don't have Pettersson. So, I mean, that's a bit of a story. Not going to have him tonight and not going to have him for the 2-game set this week against the Jets. They put them on LTIR last night. So, yeah, they have a fighting chance, but they got to keep doing this. Like, they've got to play, I think it was 685 hockey the rest of the way, and they were a 500 team. And for a lot of the year, they were like a 450 team. So, you know, I mean, it's what's more likely, that they're going to be a 650 team or a 500 team? I think if they're going to be a 500 team, that's just not going to get them there.
Patrick, you know, you mentioned, you know, Elias Pettersson and obviously, you know, the Lotto line, you know, gets a lot of the ink, right? And a lot of the attention, and deservedly so. It's a top line. And Brock Besser, you know, leads the way. And, you know, we're really familiar with him because he played, you know, a couple hours down south of us here for UND. And I wanted to ask you, though, about Bo Horvat, because he's a guy to me that, you know, might be because he centers that second line.
Yeah. But,
like, even when the Canucks were losing, I watched Bo Horvat play, and I'm a big fan of his game and how he plays on both sides of the puck, right? Like, he's not the biggest guy, but do you think he's been a little bit underappreciated in this North Division? Because I realize that, you know, Vancouver has, you know, struggled a little bit and they've played more games than anybody else. And it's just until the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks that they've climbed back into the playoff race. But does he not get enough credit about, you know, how credit for, I should say, you know, what he does for this team? Obviously he's the captain, but do you think that he's a guy that maybe is, I know it's a cliche, but is he underrated?
Well, I mean, he's got 8 points in this winning streak, so it's kind of, he's been showing up. But no, I get what you mean, because, you know, he is the second line center. I mean, that's how it works, right? I think it was interesting. I had someone last season when they were putting together their awards ballot kind of come to me and said, what do you think about Horvat for the Selke? And I'm like, I'm not quite sure yet. He plays so many minutes, and it was one of those ones where it's like, how do you rate that award? And we like to think of sort of defensive forward, the guy who kills penalties and still scores, you know, the Patrice Bergeron, you know, being the archetype. But not everybody's going to be Patrice Bergeron, but Bo Horvat is not, I don't think he's Patrice Bergeron. Patrice Bergeron is going to go to the Hall of Fame. I don't think Bo Horvat's going to go to the Hall of Fame, but he's a hell of a player. And, you know, I think a lot of it is, it goes back, you know, right to the beginning. I mean, he has in many ways, his arc through his career has been exactly, I think, how you should treat a player and set expectations. A little bit to go back to what Craig was saying. You know, Bo Horvat was, when he first came in the league, was the fourth line center, right? Like, he just played soft minutes, and they're like, it's so weird also looking at how, you know, Jim Benning's sort of management arc has gone, because in the beginning they were just like, no, we're not rebuilding, we can reset this team. You know, the Sedins were still relatively young. They liked the core. And of course, that first season, they flopped in the playoffs, to be perfectly honest. They were actually pretty good in the regular season. Willie Desjardins got completely outcoached. But on that team, Bo Horvat was the number four guy. And it was a perfect role for him. And as his career has progressed, they've added and added and added and give him a little more. And along the way, he's worked on his skills. Like, they're, you know, he's one of these guys. I mean, you always hear this about top end guys. Like, he's one of these guys who works on everything all the time. He's really boring. You know, all he does is work. And he's become this really fantastic skater. I mean, that was kind of the knock on him when he was coming out of junior, was that, you know, maybe his feet would hold him back. And that's, you know, I don't think anybody would say that anymore. You think about those goals he scored in the playoffs last summer. Yeah, he's a guy that I think he does fly under the radar a little bit on the conversation, I think it's because he's not this like dashing, flashing, creative player, you know. It's because he is the hard worker, but he's still skilled. Like, he's kind of in this sort of side corner. And like I said, you can understand why there is, you know, what might be sulky conversation with him from time to time, because he in many ways is that Bergeron type. Like, everything he does well. And, you know, he's scored goals. He's got 13 goals this year. You know, his hands are there. And you know, it's been a weird... The funny thing about his season, though, and I wrote about this a while ago, I think it was last week, and Tanner Pearson, who's been sort of nailed down to him since Pearson showed up two seasons ago as his left winger. Horvat doesn't have a single assist on... I mean, Tanner Pearson hasn't scored a ton this year, to be clear, and he's now out hurt. But Horvat doesn't have a single assist on a Pearson goal, which is just bizarre.
Yeah.
But Niels Höglander, who's played with him a fair bit, he does, you know, he's helped set up some of his goals. And it's just a weird little fact. It's one of those ones where, like, forever the story was, who the heck are going to be his wingers? We don't know who to put with them. And now they have some wingers, but it doesn't really matter. He just keeps going. He is the energizer bunny in many, many ways of this team.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms talking about the Vancouver Canucks, the Jets into Vancouver on Monday and Wednesday night. Our guest from Post Media in Vancouver is Patrick Johnston.
Okay, well, Patrick, we pay attention to Jets Twitter and what's going on in the Jets world, and we know that every Canadian market has fun fan base. And I'm going to tell you, though, I've been paying attention, because the beauty of TweetDeck is it allows me to see what people are liking and some favoriting and stuff like that. And as a result, I do see what you guys in the Vancouver media are dealing with on a fairly regular basis. I think you know where I'm going with this. But, like, you know, the fan base seems divided, which yes. is probably a nice way of putting it, in terms of
vocal.
Vocal for sure. But in terms of what is this team? Is this a Vancouver team that folks need to accept that they're now, to your point, if they can maintain this, and it's going to be a high bar, continue to push forward and be a playoff team and let those guys get that playoff experience? Or should this be a team that's sells and, you know, gets assets because their young core is still good enough, especially with a young goaltender in Thatcher Demko, to be good for many years to come?
Dave, first of all, the analogy behind your head is so perfect for Canucks Twitter. Yeah, it's just, anyway, it is a never ending fire of various types. Yeah, it is a great question. And I've set out my stall a couple weeks ago when things looked really bad, when the chances of making the playoffs were, like, you know, if you go by HockeyViz, 4%. I think they're now up to 13%, which, you know, I mean, it's a statement. Look how well they played. And yeah, they've increased their chances, but they're still pretty bad. I'm really of the mindset that at the end of the day, what do you want to do? Are you here to sort of maybe play some playoff games and, you know, okay. Or are you here to, like, win the Stanley Cup? Are you here to strive for excellence, strive for greatness? And if you're doing that, the plan to date, has, such as it is, has not been a good one. And you know, there's been sort of this endless effort to kind of make half measures. Maybe things will work out. We'll sign Tyler Myers. Maybe that will fix the problem. You know, we'll sign Jay Beagle and Antoine Roussel and Tim Schall and all these. We'll fix our fourth line by spending a bunch of money on it. We'll sign Louis Erickson because the Sedins need a winger and we don't like Alex Burrows. Like, you know, the sort of list goes on and on and on. And none of those things have worked. And in many ways, I don't like saying I told you so. But in many ways, I think those are such an example of, like, how this ownership group management team never really been willing to commit to what needs to happen. And this goes back. This is, like, almost like one of the founding stories of the Benning era, which is that Mike Gillis, who's the previous GM, goes to the ownership and says, we need to blow this up. We need to start building the next team. It's going to take 2 years. So we're going to trade everybody. We're going to get a bunch of picks. You know, we'll fix drafting. Because Gillis was terrible. The Gillis era was terrible at drafting. This is a clear criticism of his time in charge. You know, Ron DeLorme was in charge for 15 years or something like that. Three general managers, and, like, other than he had some decent hits in the first round, just atrocious outside the first round, except for, like, 1 year. You know, they needed to fix drafting. They kind of did. Benning came in. You know, like, he's, you know, there's a bunch of reasons to that story, but under his watch, the Canucks drafted better. They actually are putting players in the lineup finally. That something in a way that they hadn't really done consistently in the past, and so you know, they're sort of on the precipice. Like, this is a team that's sort of like, okay, you can see why they think the way they do, but at the end of the day, the approach they've taken in the past has not worked, and for that reason alone, I think it's a different way to go. You need to sit back and say, okay, what do we have? We have a few guys. I mean, trades are obviously going to be hard this year, and you're never going to be able to make as many moves as you can, but, you know, even Pearson, you know, he's out for 4 weeks, they say, at least. I think it's a high ankle sprain, but that's mostly just looking at the video, not having an actual assessment. So say he's back in 4 weeks. Well, that's, you know what? That's only 1 week after the trade deadline. You could trade him at the deadline. He's going to have to sit out a week anyway. So you trade him to the U.S. Even the train to the U.S., he sits. I mean, that's the thing people don't quite get. Coming north, it's 2 weeks. Going south, it's only one. And in some cases, you can actually even get an exemption. So, you know, if you think about it, there's a way to do that. So he's a guy that I think would draw interest from other teams. Brandon Sutter, I mean, my colleague Ben Kuzma suggested the Oilers would be interested, perhaps as a Kyle Turris replacement. Like, Brandon Sutter hasn't scored barely in a month, 2 months, but he's still got, you know, he'd be a handy fourth line center, you know. So there's cases to be made of at least a couple guys moving along. You know, I think Jordy Benn might actually draw some interest. You need to set things up, because the other thing is, this summer, like, forget this year, first of all. Like, this is speaking to the ownership. Ownership is not going to make any money in the playoffs. Like, that's what they're here for. So why go with that and take advantage of the moment? Because if you can stockpile a few extra picks, you can turn to a team like Carolina and say, okay, you guys aren't going to be able to protect a couple interesting defensemen. Let's trade for one. We'll give you something so that you're not going to lose him in the expansion draft. You're actually going to get something out of this. You know, there are other examples around the league of situations like that. And, you know, leverage your position a little bit, because that is how you're going to get better. And then, you know, if you do have some extra picks, you can draft well. They have a couple, you know, they've got Vasily Podkolzin coming. from the KHL, and he's going to be an interesting addition to the lineup, but he doesn't fix a lot of stuff. You know, you're still going to have to deal with your third line. You still have to deal with your fourth line. Like, you still have guys on contracts next year that are just not efficient for your lineup, and your Pettersson and Hughes contracts are getting bigger. So you need to start thinking. You really do. I mean, we always joke thinking 40 chess, right? But you really do need to start thinking in these terms, that you can't sit back and go, well, I'll fill this hole and I'll fill this hole and I'll fill this hole. it just doesn't work that way. And, you know, I mean, the Dubois for Laine example, I think, is a great one, because there was two teams had a problem and they made a swap, and that was, and it like made sense for both teams, and it lets them do other things now. And the Jets kind of got rid of their problem. Now it's the Jackets' problem, if you will. You know what I mean? Like, they've got Dubois, they figured it out. So, you know, to learn from that. I mean, the Jets model is one that Trevor Linden pointed to, like when, how that 2018 team was built, you know, how that progress happened. What Shevchenko was patient, and he also was like, I need to do this. You know, I mean, he built a team that was going like this. And Trevor Linden said that and basically led to his firing. So
it's quite the atmosphere there in Vancouver.
Always.
Patrick Johnston of Post Media is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and our social media platforms. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets and for a list of performers and showtimes, visit Rumors Comedy Club. .com. Patrick, only a couple minutes left, and so we want to get to a couple more questions. You know, you talk about the build of the Canucks. Is Jim Benning the right guy to see them through to whatever the next phase of that build looks like?
Well, it's been 7 years. I mean, if they make the playoffs, this is going to be, I think, a different conversation. It really comes down to that at this point, which in a weird way is ridiculous in how to make your process. But if they miss the playoffs, and this was sort of the case I was sort of making to this question, you know, a couple weeks ago, which, when it looked like it was completely over, and I think it still is, they will have made the playoffs twice in 7 years. This is a results-based business.
Yeah.
3-7 is not that great either. But, you know, I think if they do, it'll kind of validate ownership's position, which is, well, you know, we got in. We maybe lost you 2 years in a row. And you're like, I guess. I mean, I another analogy. I mean, I can't remember what year it is. Doug Wilson in San Jose. Remember, he made all those trades, and they still made the playoffs, and they still went on a run because they just turned things over. Like, sometimes that's the thing you need to do. I think if they do make the playoffs, and you know, they turn the corner, I think there's still a way to make the playoffs and make some moves. Like, I think that's the other thing. But yeah, to answer the question, I just to date, that just the sort of overall picture hasn't been good enough. There's been some decent drafting. There's no doubt about that. Free agents have been terrible, and most of the trades have been terrible. So
aside from that, things are going great.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, that to me, that's how you should make an assessment. At a certain point, the results matter. And to date, I would say there hasn't been enough. And so I would be surprised at this point in the offseason if Jim Benning remains the general manager. But I wouldn't be surprised if he stays either. That such is life in Vancouver.
Patrick, just one last question for you here. I mean, you know, Quinn Hughes is a player that obviously came really close to winning the Calder Trophy last year. And you know, every time I watch him, I'm just so impressed. I imagine you are, and basically the entire hockey world is. And I won't even get into, you know, how did the Detroit Red Wings not take him at sixth overall? We're not gonna you know, rub salt in the wound for Red Wings fans here. But I mean, you could argue that, you know, he could have gone as high as first overall, really. But I mean, is it easy to forget how young he is? Like, you look at the points, and he's got the reverse Cy Young right now with with two goals and 23 or 24 assists. But is it easy to forget that he's only 21 years old? Like, for me, like, this is a guy who could easily in a full 82 game season put up, you know, 70 to 80 points.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. He's young, and there's still, you know, there's still stuff for him to learn. He's, you know, every level of the game, obviously, he's been a star, and now he's at the top. And this happens for most players as they start, you know, they start discovering, wow, everyone else is good. You know, and so it's not an uncommon story. He's had some, he's been playing better lately. You know, I'm sort of been paying attention in terms of his shots against when he's on the ice, and it's, you know, the last 15, 20 games has generally been it's down. Like, he started the year, we're pretty sure he had some sort of injury, and whatever that was, he's obviously recovered from. It's interesting how the kind of, you know, we'll put requests in for our media chats, and I don't think anybody's asked for him for a while, so I don't think we've talked to him for a while. But the last time I talked to him was a couple weeks ago, and he talked a bit about his health and basically admitted, yeah, I mean, he didn't say it, but in the way he phrased, you know, it was clear that he'd been dealing with something. So, you know, I think in general, he, in a way, he's been less of a story, which is good, because the story earlier in the year was that he was having trouble. So, yeah, you're totally right. Yeah, he's a young guy. Like, he's still, you know, he's still on his way up. You know, he's still got a year or two before he truly peaks in terms of at least his production. And yeah, so, you know, that's such a good thing. That is a thing where you can understand why the Canucks are sort of optimistic for a year or two from now. But, you know, you still need to build up. Then this goes back to what I was saying before, but you still need to build out the rest of the lineup. Like, that's the lesson from the Oilers, right? Like, you can do all you want with the cream, but if there's nothing underneath it, that's the problem. And now look where the Oilers, they finally have a coach who understands what he's doing and a GM who's been able to make some decent bets and pull together a lineup that, I mean, and then, you know, obviously having an all world, the best center, you know, one of the best players ever play the game kind of changes the story. But anyway, yeah, Quinn Hughes. I mean, Quinn Hughes is, you know, I think he's going to be a star, superstar for years to come. But yeah, you're right. He's 20.
I'm not even going to ask you, Patrick, about what you were doing at 20, because I don't want that.
Drinking too much beer.
That's right.
It's been 40 years since Drew was 20.
Hey, Ezzy, when you insult Patrick, you insult when you insult me, you insult Patrick, given how obviously we're doppelgangers for one another. Yeah.
I just turned 40 earlier this month, so it's too real for me.
It's coming up for me in August, Patrick, so you know, apparently we are exactly on the same wavelength, which is getting a little bit creepy.
But, all right, boys.
Yeah,
you wish you were 38 years old like me, Drew.
Patrick, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
We'll talk
later, Patrick. Thanks.
Bye bye.
There he goes, my doppelganger and our Vancouver Canucks expert, Patrick Johnson.
Somebody needs to come out with a meme here. Like, that was incredible. And the fact that he was right below you.
I've already tweeted the picture.
And yes, and I just retweeted it saying it was the best looking left side of the screen in the history of our YouTube channel here. You know,
whoa, from the Illegal Curve account? I don't think so. That means Ezzy and I endorse your comment, and we most definitely do not.
You do endorse all of my comments. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this morning's edition of the show. We have a post-game show coming up in about, 12 hours time as well. So stay tuned. Quick commercial break, and then we'll be back with more of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show right after these messages.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile!
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go,
"We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?"
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
All righty, final thoughts for this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's brought to you by Boston Pizza. Boston Pizza has the perfect starting lineup tonight with the BP Game Day Meal Deal. Choose two of your favorite medium gourmet pizzas like the Spicy Pierogi or the Mighty Meteor, along with a triple order of Boston's famous wings plus two dipping sauces, all for $54.99. It serves 5 to 6 people, or in my case, one person. Available for takeout and delivery only at bostonpizza.com or download the MyBP app. Final thoughts from you, General, on the Jets, of course, in Edmonton. It's going to start in about, about 10 or so hours from now, 9.5 hours from now until puck drop then, and then, of course, the postgame show afterwards. Final thoughts on what you're looking for tonight, Dave and Ezzy.
Well, obviously, we're going to talk about your doppelganger, Patrick Johnston, going with the Stone Cold Steve Austin look, Drew. So my thoughts are, I just didn't realize there was a member of the hockey media that looked that much like you. So
there's nobody that looks like you, though. I can assure you of that. There is absolutely nobody in the hockey media who looks like you, my good friend.
Yeah, and that's definitely a good thing. But no, I mean, it should be a much better hockey game tonight, boys, in Edmonton. The game the other night was just not a crispy game. It wasn't a silky game, as Paul Maurice said. So we're expecting a lot more goals, certainly, and just a much sharper game from each side. But, you know, looking at it at more of a macro level, it's just going to be really interesting to see what happens on this road trip. By far, you know, the toughest road trip when you consider it's right in the middle of 17 games in 31 days. So it's going to be interesting to see, if we see a Ville Heinola come into the lineup or maybe a Jansen Harkins come into the lineup. But, this stretch here over the next week or so is going to have a huge impact on the standings. Can the Calgary Flames maintain pace, you know, with the rest of the division? Can the Vancouver Canucks, you know, continue their winning ways? Obviously, the Jets are hoping that they're able to end those winning ways. But, you know, just overall looking to see how the Jets have bounced back from a bit of a rough stretch. We talked about it earlier, right? The Jets have lost 3 of their last 5 games. And yes, one of those was in overtime. But, you know, this has been, you know, a little bit of a difficult stretch, which is to be expected based on, you know, the condensed schedule. But just overall looking forward to much sharper efforts from the Jets here coming up in Edmonton and then continuing through the road trip.
Dave Minuk, final thought.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're going to know in about an hour when Jets morning skate in quotes here in Manitoba gets going in Edmonton. So we'll see. We'll have some sort of indication, maybe not necessarily there because, of course, there's no Jets media currently covering the team that's traveling. So we won't necessarily get that insight right at 11:30 in Edmonton, 12:30 here in Winnipeg. But the fact of the matter is that once Paul Maurice speaks, we'll find out. And so you can come to illegalcurve.com, get the pregame report. All we'll have. The players and Paul Maurice's comments featured there. To Ezzy's point, I mean, I think it's just a function of can we see this Jets team do what they've done all season long, which is bounce back from a loss and have a better effort. We saw it against the Leafs. I actually anticipate that the Jets will. I mean, maybe I'll be eating crow in, you know, to your point, Drew, in about 12 hours. When
crow
when,
doesn't taste very good. I've tried it to eat before. I wouldn't advise on that.
Is crow kosher?
Not that I'm aware of, but that's why I don't plan on eating it, if you know what
Fair
I'm saying.
Fair enough, touche.
So the point is that I would anticipate that this team is prepared to do what they've done all season long. I mean, again, that's what you've come to expect. That's been the standard. Connor Hellebuck, we know, is in net after having a game off. So, you know, he'll be ready to go and he'll be sharp. And again, to me, it's a function of can this team do what it's done all season long, right? That's what they've been consistent at is being able to bounce back. So we'll see what they are able to do. But I would anticipate I mean, A, I don't anticipate any lineup changes, and B, I would anticipate a bounce back effort from this Winnipeg Jets team, which again, it wasn't like it was an atrocious effort on Thursday. I thought the whole Thursday was a one-off because of both Edmonton, from both Edmonton and Winnipeg's perspective. So I think both teams are going to want to play better. And I just think it's incumbent on the Jets knowing, and again, I think it's a function of knowing what you've got coming behind you. You know, Vancouver is charging hard. Calgary is playing well in front of their new coach. You've got Montreal that's, you know, 3 points back of you. You've created a cushion. It's not insurmountable. And that's, I think, probably a good thing. They've got, they can feel it. They can feel these teams breathing down their backs. And again, it's all about creating some space and adding points to that standing banks. So that's why it's so important for the Jets not to hold their sticks tightly and play it as if the game is, you know, we've got everything on the line, but just knowing that you can't afford to lose ground and that these are all 4-point games.
And on that note, we want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program today. Of course, in hour number one, Sarah Orleski, Craig Button, and then Patrick Johnston of Post Media. In case you missed any of the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button on our YouTube channel. Smash that Smash that like button right now, folks.
Smash Don't it like Smash Mouth.
Even if you're listening to the podcast, go on YouTube.
There you go.
Hit like, hit subscribe.
And then smash it.
And don't smash it because we don't want people to smash their computers.
And then, of course, if you're watching on YouTube, go subscribe to the podcast. It's a constant rotation of things you need to be subscribing to. And of course, a reminder, the post-game show, when tonight's contest ends, we're estimating right around probably 11:30, 11:45 or so p.m. tonight.
Nice and early.
Ezra Ginsberg's already tapped out. He said he's too old and he's too tired to do the post-game show tonight. So Dave and I will be joining you for a late night edition of the post-game show.
We'll not be I'll a be long one.
Next week. I'm taking one night off. You know, I'm an old man with two kids. Like, I got to take the night off. Drew, you can't relate to that.
I'm an older man with two kids as well, and I'm going to be here. So you're just a lazy man. That's all that is. But that's okay. We let you go. We understand that the artist, you know, the brilliant mind that is the mind.
He needs a reset.
Yeah. That's right. He needs a reset. Anyway,
I don't know about brilliant, but it's something.
It's a mind.
It's a beautiful mind.
It's a mind. It's for sure a mind.
It is definitely a mind.
That's right. We want to give a big shout out and a big thank you to all of our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Boston Pizza. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey and they make this program a reality. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. This has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll see you in about 12 hours or so for the post-game show. Thanks for watching, everybody.
No penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk.